Health and Fitness with David Hollywood with the all-new Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. MidlandsParkHotel.com.
Midlands 103.
Welcome. On this week's show, we meet the lady behind the Menopause Hub and their newly launched app. You'll hear from your favourite breakfast show presenter on his arduous and eventful journey from the couch to the Manchester Marathon. Speaking of journeys, there's a remarkable fundraiser called Push for Paul, an odyssey across the country to raise awareness about wheelchair access. We meet a Midlands man behind the event, and you'll learn about the resilient and much-loved Paul Murphy. And finally, Health and Fitness investigates our relationship with sport through the work of the Westmeath Sports Partnership. When it comes to the issue of the menopause, many will probably comment that we're coming out of the dark ages on this one. The positive is that progress is being made. The concerning thing is that many women in their 40s and their 50s are still unnecessarily going through great difficulty when it comes to dealing with all of the changes that they experience in their lives at this point. I'm very glad to say joining us on Health and Fitness this evening is the CEO of the Menopause Hub, Loretta Dignam. They've launched a new app. Loretta's on hand to talk us through all of it. Loretta, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me on the show to talk about this. You're right. It was in the dark ages. And it feels like menopause, which affects 50% of the population, is actually, you know, just being spoken about in the last couple of years and been secret and taboo for over 2020 years, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, if ever there was an indication that it's a patriarchal society, that simple line is the case. It underlines it, really. So, look, one of the things that is helping to bring this issue out into the spotlight and properly help women is a new app that you've launched. And to me, it just came across when I read the release about it as being brilliantly practical and the kind of thing that should have existed a very long time ago. And I know it's just come out in the last couple of weeks. You might talk us through what the Menopause Hub app is and does.
Yeah, so basically I set up the Menopause Hub born out of my own experience of going through menopause. So I look at everything through the eyes of a patient, if you like, or a woman who might be experiencing menopause. And one of the things that I was unaware of was all the different symptoms that are there. And if I'd known all of that back in my 40s, I would have avoided a number of years of suboptimal health and unnecessary GP visits and things like that. So I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if women could track their symptoms and they could see all the list of symptoms? And that would prompt them to think about, gosh, you know, maybe I'm in perimenopause or menopause. And then they can track those symptoms over time. They can also get a lot of information, which is evidence-based information, because when I consulted Dr. Google during my experience, I found such conflicting information. So it's really important to know, you know, what information you can trust, what is fact, what is fiction. And there's so many myths surrounding this menopause. So to have that information is brilliant. And then for anybody who becomes a patient of the clinic or is an existing patient, we can help them with their clinical care pathway. So it will be things like reminders of when to change your patch or take your medication or whatever, because, you know, we're busy women and we've got busy lives, you know, probably working outside the home, children, families, running households, all that kind of thing. And the last thing we need to do is to have to remember all these sometimes can be complicated regimes. So it just helps you with reminders about that. And as time goes by, we'll release more things onto the app as we understand what women want. And then we'll also be using all that data when people give us permission to use the anonymized data, just to help inform the medical community, to maybe put research papers together and that kind of thing. And look, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about improving women's lives when they experience menopause and perimenopause. So that's the goal, really, of all of this.
And I'm right in saying then the app can be picked up in the usual spots where people get their apps?
Yeah. So, you know, the Google App Store and the Apple Play Store or whatever they're called. Google.
Yes. Check out
Play
whatever
Store
they're
the Apple
called.
App Store.
No, I think at this point it's become second nature where we know what our native app is, as it were, our app shop app.
Yes.
That's an interesting point regarding the data that's collected, so that those who are using the app, you on the other end of the program, all of this is actually helping contribute to future solutions as well that we haven't actually fathomed yet, because this is the kind of data that's been lacking when it comes to potential research for prescribing treatments in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we all know that, and once again, back to the patriarchal society, that, you know, women's health has been under investigated, clinical trials, all that kind of thing. So this will help add information into that pool of data to try and improve outcomes. And I can remember standing in my kitchen, my daughter was going through puberty and I was going through kind of the height of my hot flushes and things, and thinking, wow, you know, when it gets to your time, I really hope this whole menopause thing is completely revolutionized and completely different, and that you won't, you know, come into menopause and perimenopause with no knowledge, that there will be lots of different, you know, pieces of information available, there'll be lots of different treatment options available, etc. And that will be a very different experience. And I know that that will be the case.
It must mean an awful lot to you then to be doing the work that you do and to be helping deliver these kinds of services and practical things like the app, considering your own personal moments like you've just described.
Yeah, I mean, part of me is like, you know, I would have said I'm reasonably intelligent, reasonably well-educated, sort of woman of the world. And at 49, I had my last period and then I got hot flushes. And they were the only two things I knew about menopause. And I felt really blindsided by the experience. And I didn't know who to trust or where to go. And I tried all sorts of ridiculous natural things that, you know, didn't work because I was terrified of hormone replacement therapy. But when I went on HRT eventually, I started to feel great and whatever. And that was then that prompted me to go, what are other women doing? Why is no one talking about this? And then part of me is also kind of maybe a little bit angry on behalf of our mothers and previous generations who, you know, had to put up and kind of shut up. And, you know, I can remember as a child or a teenager, you know, women in the area who suffered with their nerves, women who took to the bed, women who went into psychiatric institutions and things. And when we look back, they were probably in the 40, 50 sort of age group. And it was so kind of shameful. And women were expected just to get on with things. And I just, so part of it is, you know, the future generation. Part of it is the current women experiencing this, but I don't want them to have to go through what I did. And then part of it is, you know, on behalf of our mothers and grandmothers, you know, I want to make amends for this. There's a psychologist would have a field day, I'm sure.
Well, no, you're right. We really do carry the weight of our own history when it comes to these issues. And it's why I think it takes so long, even though there's a level of awareness, it takes so long to actually get practical progress in place. Talk to us about the Menopause Hub then. What are the kinds of services that you offer to your patients or clients there? Talk to us about how the hub actually works.
Yeah, so of course, after I did my research and found out that I wasn't alone on this journey and that, you know, women were experiencing similar, maybe not exactly the same, but similar things, I decided, right, I'm going to do something about this. So I decided, no medical experience or anything, that I would set up Ireland's first dedicated menopause clinic. And so I did get doctors on board to help and to provide the services. But when I look back, that was the beginning of the end of 2018. And in the UK, there was a clinic opening up around the same time. So we were the first two clinics in the world to open up that was dedicated just to menopause. Hard to believe when something affects 50% of the population. And I think the issue is that, you know, GPs are really busy. They're looking after sort of cradle to grave. They weren't up to speed on menopause in many instances. But also the consultation takes a while because there's so many different symptoms that women can experience. Like there's up to 40 symptoms. So I decided to introduce a model where our consultations will be up to 30 minutes. Now that it's more expensive than a GP visit because it takes more time. But so that's what we opened up, and it's a self-referral clinic. So women can refer themselves. They don't need a GP you know, letter or referral or anything like that. And since the first clinic opened, then we went into COVID. So then we moved to telehealth video consultations. So women can access the clinics from anywhere in the country. And then since we've opened up a clinic on the north side of Dublin to service the northeast of the country, we have one on the south side of Dublin that serves the southeast, And we opened one in Cork just last October to service the Southwest. And slowly but surely, we're making our way around the country to offer clinical services to women. So, and the other thing we did is we introduced, obviously, a medical team. But we also have psychologists, women health physiotherapists, and dietitians and nutritionists, because we believe in a holistic approach, but evidence-based. And so that's what we offer through the clinics. The service has been, like, from day one, we have been, in fact, we had a waiting list when we opened. So the clinics are very busy, but we now have enough capacity to offer women appointments. They don't need to wait a long time. And then we also offer menopause in the workplace training for organisations. And we introduced the Menopause Workplace Excellence Awards in 2023. And in 2024, we're launching menopause accreditation for workplaces. So we're trying to do not only things to help women in their personal lives, but also in the workplace, because about 10% of women leave work due to their symptoms. And about a third consider giving up work because of their symptoms. And realistically, you know, women have a great role to play in the workplace. And this is typically at the age of 45 for perimenopause, the average age, and 51 for menopause, is the age when women come into, their power. They take on more responsibility. They, you know, they get promoted. They go on board. We're looking at, you know, diversity and inclusion. We're looking at gender pay gap. And so this is a time when women can be taking on those roles, and yet they might be affected by menopause in the workplace. So it's about bringing them into place, supports, policies, that kind of thing for managers, for HR, and for all staff.
Next on the show, Peter Dunn is in the house to tell us about taking on the Mullingar Half Marathon off the back of a bout of gastroenteritis.
Ugh. Health and fitness with the all-new Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club, where relaxation meets rejuvenation. Find out more at midlandsparkhotel.com. Midlands
103. What does it take to go from the couch to running a marathon? A question that no one in the right mind asked themselves. I'm very glad to say that Peter Dunn from Breakfast with Peter Dunn joins me. And Peter, it was a question you not only asked yourself, but you blooming well said it out loud. How are you getting on?
Not too bad. We're in week 15 at this moment in time out of 18. So we've nearly 3 weeks to go until we tackle the Manchester Marathon. So it's been some journey.
It's been nuts, Peter. Peter Dunn has been endeavouring to run this marathon in Manchester. This is part of Get Active with Midlands 103. It's been a great movement at this point. It's taken so many of us along with you. And you had a huge moment or a huge landmark in the journey last week, which was the Mullingar Half Marathon. It was only your second ever race. You've been through so many complications. Condense all that down for me. What happened to you in the build up? How did the day itself go?
How long do you have?
Not very long, Peter.
Yeah, look, the journey up until now from week one has been very interesting. I went for a medical, and it turns out I had a heart murmur, which we got further investigation on, and thankfully I don't. I did a grade 2 soleus muscle tear, which I've never heard of before in my life.
No.
And it's just second to surgery, where I went for a run one day. I felt a niggle in the leg, and it turned out to be an awful lot worse than initially we thought. That set me back about 8 weeks out of 18. In total.
Almost so, half of your preparation time.
Pretty much, yeah. So, you know, the lead up to it was not running on the road. It was a lot of cycling in the gym, cross training, that kind of stuff, and just following a plan to rebuild the muscle back up that was set out by colleague and Physio Central in Tullamore has been excellent. And yeah, just trying to do whatever you can do, you know, divert around the injury and do what you can do to make sure you can you can reach your goal, because, you know, you put a lot of pressure on yourself. Like when you come out and say, this is what we want to do, it's a challenge we want to do for charity.
Yeah.
You want to be able to do it. You know what I mean? And you do feel a lot of pressure on yourself. It was just me. I probably would have quit at this stage, to be honest with you.
Well, thank God it wasn't just you, and there's a lot of pressure on you to get this done. And through hell or high water, you kept the cardio going on the bike. You reintroduced jogging through walk and jogging with great advice from the people that you've mentioned there. And you got to the week of the Mullingar Half Marathon jogging and walking. But it got even worse during that week then.
It did, yeah. I developed a cough early on in the week, and I thought, ah, this is nothing major. And then on the Wednesday, we were to run on the Sunday. On the Wednesday, I got this craving for sugar, and I started to get really, really shaky. And I just thought, I might just relax for a few minutes here. That relax turned into about 15 hours of between lying on the couch and sleeping, where I had gastroenteritis, and I was up and down and up and down. I won't go into gory details. But yeah, so I was out of breath when I turned over in the bed. And I was just lying there thinking, how am I supposed to do 21K when I can't catch my breath when I turn from the left side to the right side of the pillow?
So you ran the Mullingar Half Marathon. First and foremost, how does it sound to hear that today?
It's amazing, because this day last week, I didn't think I would be able to do it. But it was just, it was brilliant. Look, it was... What a buzz, you know, when you start off the start line, obviously, and the crowds are there, the music is pumping, people are in good spirits, you're chatting to complete strangers, people you've never met before, the signs the kids had made up and all that as well. It really does get you through, because people are saying you'll get a boost on the day. And
you don't know what that's like until you get it.
No, you're right, absolutely. But another thing that hit my mind was, we're supposed to do twice this.
Come here. Yeah, okay. So that's it. That's a good point to move on to now. Congratulations on finishing the half marathon. Very shortly, you're going to have to double that. So what happens between now and the Manchester Marathon? When is the Manchester Marathon?
It's on April 14th. It's a Sunday.
April 14th, it is less than 4 weeks away.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you're probably, as you said, you're already behind the eight ball in terms of preparation because of the bits and pieces of issues that you've had. What's the plan for the remaining time that you've got?
So the plan is this weekend we have to do our longest run before the marathon. So the longest run might take us to about 28 kilometres. And after that... it'll be probably about 5 days a week training different ways. So we'll do a few short runs. We'll do one thing I do have to do, like we're going to taper at this stage. So the following week, we'll come down to about, I don't know, maybe about 18K. Then the week after, maybe about 12, 14 kilometres. And then after that, it'll be just a couple of easy runs during the week. But one thing I'm going to have to do a little bit more of is getting the body used to doing hours of cardio. So my aim is to do, if I can do it in about 5 hours, the marathon, I'll be really, really happy.
And even exercising in any way for 5 hours is a totally foreign thing. Mm-hmm. There's no experience growing up or as a young man that you would have had at doing that duration of exercise.
Not a hope.
So you need specialist preparation for it. And like you say, be it building up cardio on the bike or the long days on the road, this kind of stuff needs to be put in if you're going to get through the full marathon.
That's exactly it. I mean, your body needs to get used to it. It's not used to it. So you need to try and acclimatise it as much as you can. So let's say when I go out, I'm going to get the bike maybe during the week and do hopefully about a 4 hour cycle or so. But when in those hour intervals, I'm going to have to take on the food on board and the nutrition on board that I'm going to have to take for the marathon. So I'm going to have to get my body used to doing that. Now we have been doing, which is great, because every hour I get to wolf down 6 jelly babies when I'm running.
What a win.
Oh, I tell you, my little girl just wants to go running just so she can have jelly babies.
The jealousy, yeah.
But that's what you have to do. And there's, I have these little sports packs, these sports gels that I have to get used to as well, get the body used to.
But the digestive system, not a fan of it initially.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to be really careful. You have to take a few of them at home, you'd make sure they're okay. Then you have to take them when you're out and about as well. And just get your body used to being in that, I suppose, in that state where you need energy. And it craves that energy then, because it's something I have experienced recently where after 2 hours of exercise, my body's nearly like knocking on my door going, come on, food. We need it now.
That's it. You get the bonk, as they call it, I think, in cycling, where you end up on empty in terms of energy and just all power goes from the legs. And what you need to do there is load up on your sugars and your whatever else is in those gels and that type of thing.
That's it, yeah.
It occurs to me that you're very enthusiastic as you speak to me. So how much have you been enjoying the whole Get Active with Midlands 103 initiative? Because it's been your baby, as it were. It's for a great cause in Barrettstown, but that brings with it its own pressure that you've had to fight through injury and illness. But it just hits me as we talk today on health and fitness that you're really enjoying it still. Like, you've got enthusiasm. Do you think this will be something that you kind of continue with after all of the prep for the marathon is done?
It is definitely something I continue with. I don't know if I'd ever do another marathon again.
She won't know until you do one.
Exactly. Yeah. Do this, get it out of the way. But there's a lot of work involved, you know, and it does impact your work life, your social life, your personal life. It takes over. But I wanted to experience it because, look, we'll all experience challenges in life where, you know, we'll be going through difficulties. And I didn't know how difficult this would be. I was talking to Jerry Duffy. Jerry, incredible. He ran 32 marathons in 32 days. And I spoke to him on our podcast, Get Active, with Midlands 103. And one of the things he said is you have to respect a marathon. You know, it's nothing to be sneezed at. You have to respect it. And a marathon's kind of become one of those things where, you know, you're in the canteen of a Monday morning after work and somebody says, do you do anything nice for the weekend? Yeah, I ran a marathon. Yeah. Do you do anything else? No? All right. You know, but it's become one of those things because so many people have done it. But it would teach you an awful lot about what people go through, even in terms of, let's say, you know, we're doing this for Barrettstown Children's Charity. And I had a low moment recently.
Yeah.
Where I decided, I actually gave up and I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I was in my kitchen. I was thinking about the whole thing and everything that was involved. And I just said, no, I'm done.
Oh,
to be honest,
gosh.
I'm out of here. And then I thought about it a bit more and I said, well, look, I can choose not to do this. It's my choice and nobody's going to be mad at me. Everything will be okay, you know, but you've got so many people, children, families who are going through the charity or fundraising for a Barrettstown Children's Charity who can't choose to give up, who are fighting, who some will win the fight, some won't win the fight. And, you know, when you do marathon training, without getting too deep, when you do marathon training, it calls upon these reserves you don't think you have. It calls upon a mentality you probably don't think you have where you're constantly pushing, fighting. And it's a psychological battle as well as a physical battle. And there's so many people going through that right now. And to experience that, I think it will make me stronger as a person going forward to know that if there's a challenge I want to do or if there's something I want to aim towards, these are the fundamentals I have to put in place. You know, it's like with anything.
And you now know you've got it in you to overcome significant challenges.
Yeah. I mean, look, it takes a bit of determination, persistence, and it takes people around you as well. You know, if you want to, whether you could be starting a new business, you could be, you know, fighting your own health difficulties. You know where the end line is, where the goal is. Now work backwards. How do I get there? What do I do? Who do I speak to? Who knows more about this than I do that I need to know? You know what I mean?
Tell us, how do people support Barrettstown if they're listening in and they want to do that?
Oh, please, 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 please support Barrettstown. They are an amazing charity and we're going to go, actually, just an exclusive for you, David.
Oh,
we're going to go and visit Barrettstown in a couple of weeks. Myself and Christopher Cribben, big shout to Christopher, who's running the marathon with
Brilliant.
Me. And yourself and Will gave up at the half mark, David. We won't talk about that. Anyways. And we're going to continue to do the full. But myself and Christopher are going to go to Barrettstown. And we said we'd love to go. We'd love to chat to some of the boys and girls who are there on one of the weekend camps and some of the volunteers who are just absolutely brilliant. But what we're going to do is we're going to bring the gear, bring the equipment, and we're going to put on a disco for the kids. Because look, we work in radio. We may as well bring the music, bring the crack, bring
amazing.
The fun. So we're going to do that in Barrystown very soon. And, you know, stay tuned and we'll let you know what happens there and a little bit more about what happens behind the big red doors in Barrystown. They do amazing work. And we're just trying to raise as much money as we can. I mean, we've had people get in touch who have had children who've been through Barrystown themselves as children. We've had people who have nieces, nephews that are going through it from the Midlands, and they do just absolutely brilliant work. I mean, Barrystown often say that the doctors treat the illness, Barrystown treat the children.
Ah, that's you know, a perfect way to sum up what they do.
100%. Absolutely.
If anybody can spare anything, there's no better cause. And it's brilliant what you're doing, Peter.
Thanks,
big congratulations to yourself, to Christy, to Claire O'Brien, who went over to Amsterdam around
Claire
the half marathon.
Was brilliant, wasn't
yeah,
she?
Unreal.
She was a dark horse. She said nothing.
Magic.
Absolutely nothing.
And
did a bit of training with us, kept in touch with us. And we all shared our training during the weeks and all that. And Claire just came out of the blue and said, there you go, I'm doing the half.
Class act, fair play to her. Peter, the best of luck with this last 4 weeks and congratulations on everything so far.
Thanks, David. Before we go, can I just mention, if you want to donate, just hop onto the website, midlands103.com, click on Get Active, or you can find it on our social page. It'll just take you to our iDonate page and donate 10 euro or more and you'll be put into a draw to win a year's membership for the Unit Gym in Clara and a signed Manchester United jersey as well. And there's rumours of a Liverpool signed jersey on the way as well. There's not exclusive, David.
Wow.
There's another one for you now.
You bequeathed me with so much on health and fitness this evening, Peter. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, David.
When we return, you'll hear about the charity fundraiser that will run from Drogheda through the Midlands and ending in Kerry, all in the name of family and in the name of raising awareness about wheelchair access.
Health and fitness with the newly refurbished Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. Refresh your fitness journey with dedicated personal trainers on hand to help you achieve your goals. Find out more at MidlandsParkHotel.com. Midlands
103. Now, I'm going to tell you about a man from Wexford. His name is Paul Murphy. He has mitochondrial myopathy. It's a condition that's very similar to motor neuron disease. Paul, who now lives with his family in Kerry, is wheelchair bound and he lives with impaired motor skills. Push for Paul is a fundraising initiative that we'll be stopping off in the Midlands over the course of the next number of weeks. It's a fantastic event. I've enlisted the help of a Midlands man to talk us through it. Gisho's Matthew Farrelly is on the line and is now on Health and Fitness. Matthew, thanks for taking our call.
No problem, David. Pleasure. Thank you.
Push for Paul. It's going to see Paul's friends and maybe a wider community push a wheelchair across the country. This is a remarkable 350-kilometre challenge. Tell us all about it, why you guys are doing it and what it involves.
Absolutely. And thank you, David, for the opportunity to discuss the Push for Paul fundraiser. So Paul Murphy and a number of us were in college together nearly close to 30 years ago now at this stage. And obviously we've all stayed in contact over the last number of years. But unfortunately, over the last couple of years, Paul has been diagnosed with, as you've explained, myocardial myopathy. And as a result of this rare disease, he has unfortunately become wheelchair bound over the last number of months. And the difficulty now Paul has, I suppose, having two young children, that again, in terms of him going to watch the sports, go to see their activities, even get into local national schools for any events that they're involved in, has become quite difficult for Paul because, again, accessibility for people in wheelchairs, we believe, and I think some of the Irish Wheelchair Association have been lobbying for years, are just not to the standard where they should be for people, unfortunately, who have been assigned to wheelchairs. Mm. So that's part of the reason we are fundraising, and also, I suppose, it's in terms of Paul and his future and trying to provide financial support to provide equipment for Paul that he can use in his daily routines at home, but also as well Harry and Sadie in terms of their future and being able to go to college like everybody else. So we want to contribute towards that for the future as well.
Yeah, there's a couple of big things there. Your fundraising to secure the futures of young people who really are, that security has been undermined by this tragic situation. But by the same token, you're working to raise awareness about accessibility, which is a really important conversation when it comes to wheelchair users in this country. And anyone I speak to who is a wheelchair user, they generally say that it's not until you live a day in the chair you really see the challenges that are in place. And we have to fight to get over that ignorance for those who aren't in a wheelchair. I imagine, knowing Paul as you do, then you've already learned yourself over the course of recent times how much of a bad spot we are in terms of wheelchair accessibility.
Absolutely. And a number of weeks ago, Paul and Linda, his wife, and the kids came up to visit us in Giessel and stay with us for over the weekend. And while they were up, we decided to, my kids are involved in equestrian, and we went to a local equestrian centre, a journey away. And what we found there, in terms of trying to get Paul accessibility into, say, an indoor arena, proved very difficult. So even from that, there was just the simple kind of daily things that we all take for granted, trying to get Paul then into a coffee shop, then trying to get him to the toilet. And all of this, you know, these difficulties that we encountered over, and literally over the space of a couple of hours, you know, during a Saturday. And it really came to the fore then of how difficult it is. And I suppose we managed that day because I was there to help Linda. But again, as Gemma, my wife, and I spoke about post their visit, that Linda generally has to do all of this on her own. And like, Paul's a big chap. He's 6'4". And, you know, as we always slag him, he weighs a bit. But the difficulty then, you know, trying to maneuver a wheelchair, first of all, the fact that Paul doesn't want to be in it, and secondly, obviously, then he feels guilty then of Linda having to encounter all these difficulties moving him around the place. So it's very tough, and particularly then when they visit facilities they don't have, are not set up properly for them, it just adds to frustration, and it's something that we want to change, and that we're very passionate about, and that's why we want to increase the awareness around it.
Well, what you're doing is very much that, considering the challenge that you're all taking on. You're going to see so much of the country. And when it comes to Tuesday, April 23rd, you'll be in Offaly as well. Talk us through what's happening in Tullamore that day.
We will. So we hope to arrive in. So I have 17 brave soldiers, male and female runners, who have agreed to come and help us out on the leg of the journey. So they're going to push the chair. So we'll come into Tullamore on the Tuesday evening, hopefully around 6 p.m. It'll have travelled down through the Midlands from Trim and County Meath during the day. We're going to be come into the town. We'll probably finish up around the Bridge Centre shopping centre, and John Cusick has been very good to us there in town. He's going to look after the local logistics of that. We have Kieran Stewart in Supermax, who's going to help us out in terms of catering. And we have a few other local businesses who have quite kindly sponsored us and will help us out as well. So the local Gardaí has been very good. So essentially, the runners will come in. We'll have a mini reception. Cathaoirleach Councillor Eddie Fitzpatrick is going to welcome everybody in, say a few words. And Paul will be there to greet everybody on the night as well. So I'm going to bring Paul around to each of the stages throughout the journey during the week. So again, just for Paul to meet everybody and see the goodwill and support that everybody's shown him out there, and quite rightly. So that's David. That's kind of what we're looking at. We're encouraging as many people as possible to come out on the evening. Should be good bit of fun. We'll have some music and a bit of entertainment, hopefully as well. And I've actually been chatting to Richard Ross, who's the service coordinator in the Irish Wheelchair Association in Ballinagar, who provide a brilliant service out there. And Richard's hoping to get some of his members to come in on the night as well and show their support to Paul. And again, that will help raising the awareness of what the IWA do in around County Offaly and throughout the Midlands as well.
Yeah, the Irish Wheelchair Association do phenomenal work.
Exactly.
And if you can't make it to Tullamore, this push for Paul starts in Drogheda on the 21st. You're going through Trim, after Tullamore, Nina, then it's Adair, Castle Island, finish up in Killarney. You've raised an incredible €66,000 so far. You have a €100,000 target. If someone listening can't make it to these events, but they want to support Paul and his family and the campaign for raising awareness about wheelchair access, how can they do that?
Well, we'd be eternally grateful if people would make a contribution. That would be fantastic for our campaign. The best way to do it, go on to, we've an iDonate page set up, and it's www.idonate.ie/fundraiser/pushforpaul. And if they go on the iDonate page, it's a fairly simple transaction from there. So anything great, small or large, maybe we're very grateful for any little bit of contribution that people can afford.
The received wisdom in our world is that sports participation is good for our health. How do we get it to the people of the Midlands? The Westmeath Sports Partnership will explain next.
Health and fitness with the newly refurbished Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. Take the plunge in a new routine with our swimming pool, plunge pool, jacuzzi, sauna and steam room. For more, visit MidlandsParkHotel.com. Midlands 103.
What is sport? For some of us, it's there for us to find a channel within which to compete. For many of us, and as we learn more, it's simply there for us to move our bodies. And from a very early age, it's been identified as a key component to a healthy lifestyle. The state are also obliged to help us in our pursuit of sport, and we have representatives of the government through the Midlands to bring that. So Westmeath Sports Partnership are exactly one of those. I'm very glad to say joining us on Health and Fitness this evening is Westmeath Sports Partnership Coordinator Tony Wheat. Tony, thanks very much for joining us on Health and Fitness this evening.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me, David.
So, look, I know Westmeath Sports Partnership, they're very much saying they're dedicated to the promotion and development of sport in County Westmeath. From the Sports Partnership's perspective, why is that important?
Well, I think it's important, as you've kind of said in your introduction there, that that everybody, or as many people as possible, can lead an active lifestyle. Many sort of well-known benefits to being active, both, not just physical benefits of having a physically active body and the sort of the things that come around, the sort of associated benefits of that from a health perspective, but also from a mental health benefit, which has obviously become increasingly more of a focus in recent years. And I think there are other benefits as well to being involved in sport, and, sort of social benefits, community cohesion, friendship. There's just any number of reasons to be involved, and obviously the enjoyment factor as well. It's something sport generally people take part in as well because they enjoy it. And I think we all work hard, and we all we all need an outlet sometimes, and sport's often a very good way to have an outlet to sort of let off a bit of steam and also enjoy yourself.
Just out of curiosity, if you're letting off steam and you're engaging with sport, what has ever taken your interest and fancy, or what have been the things that you've dabbled in?
For me personally, I've been involved mainly in rugby throughout my life, both as a player and an administrator. So that's kind of been my main focus. Played at a reasonably decent standard back in England when I was there. And now I'm involved off the field in, funnily enough, in the judicial side, the disciplinary side of things. So if players are misbehaving and sent off, they usually come my way. But I'm also, strangely enough, involved in American football. I've been a fan since I was a kid, and I write. I write for an American website, and also I appear on podcasts occasionally as well. So we're a little bit of everything. Play a bit of golf as well, very badly. But that just goes back to the enjoyment thing. I enjoy it despite not being very good.
Yeah, and like there's great lessons to be learned from playing golf and rugby, because they have such value structures in them, and I suppose that's one of the great benefits of all sports, is that they've been there for so long and they do imbue us with the values that they promote themselves. Let's bring it back to the task at hand here. You're the coordinator for Westmeath Sports Partnership. Now that, I imagine, is a job that has maybe some dense organizational responsibilities, but at the end of the day, you're delivering services to people that make a difference in their lives. So are you able to take motivation and satisfaction personally from the fact that that's the case?
Yeah, I think I feel very fortunate to be working in a sector that is something that I enjoy sort of personally and socially as well. It's great at the level that we work at, which is sort of the participation, you know, they're actually getting people active and participating, some people who may not otherwise be active. And we target certain groups and certain areas where, you know, we need to try and get increased levels of participation. And you know, it is extremely rewarding to see the difference that we can make, where, you know, people who do get involved, you know, you see the smile on your faces, you see the enjoyment, you see the fact that they want to come back. I think the fact that, you know, if we do courses and we get huge demand for sort of follow-up courses as well, because people are enjoying what we provide. So, yeah, it's very satisfying to work in this kind of sector, for sure.
Talk us through what your day-to-day is, how a working week typically looks like from the coordinator's perspective.
Okay, so I'm the coordinator, so effectively that's the sort of the manager of the partnership, and we have a team of six of us. Well, it's actually five at the moment. We have a vacant post, but it's normally six. In fact, those sort of local sports partnerships, there's one in each county across the country, and they vary in size dependent upon the area. Now we're a sort of relatively sort of small area, but we have six staff. So my job is kind of to manage the team. That involves talking to the guys around the programs that they're running. We have three development officers who predominantly organise and facilitate the programs and projects that we run. So we have a community sports development officer, we have a sports inclusion disability officer, and an outdoors development officer. So I manage them, and they work on their programs, and I kind of liaise with them around that. We have a communications officer, and we also have an administrator who sort of ties everything together that we do as well. So I manage that team. I also kind of look at things from the sort of strategic level as well, around funding applications. Obviously yesterday the funding announcement was made from Sport Ireland, but it's not just that funding that we get. We get funding through other sources, including sort of Healthy Ireland, Dormant Accounts, which is run through Sport Ireland. So I'm kind of responsible for that end of things as well. And and I also meet with a lot of the sort of the managers of the stakeholders that we work with. So whether it's through Healthy Ireland, or whether it's with the sort of youth work sector, or whether it's national governing bodies of sport. I also meet regularly with my sort of counterparts and Sport Ireland across the country to make sure that, you know, we're all singing off the same hymn sheet, sort of from the national agenda, but applying it locally to our own county. So, the week's fairly busy generally, but as I said before, it's rewarding, because I'm not sure how many people would sort of say that they get up in the morning and, you know, really enjoy going to work to do the job. So I'm lucky in that regard.
And participation is objective number one for every sports partnership across the country then?
Yeah, pretty much. It's kind of it's providing and presenting as many opportunities to take part for as many kind of different groups as possible. So there are a number of target groups that we have, including sort of women and girls, older adults, people with disabilities, people from sort of socially excluded backgrounds and areas. And, you know, it's kind of, there's a real focus now on equality and inclusion. And part of our role is to make sure that we provide opportunities for those people that may otherwise kind of not have them. That's a real big focus both for ourselves and LSPs across the country in general.
the funding that was announced, as you alluded to there, it was just over €1 million for the Midlands counties, Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Over around 300,000, I think, for Westmeath. This funding then specifically, when it lands, do you know where it's going? Because it has to be earmarked or highlighted prior to the funding coming through, or it lands and then you have to determine how to use it?
Well, we apply for the funding back end of the previous year, so kind of October 2023, we apply for our 2024 funding, which obviously the final details were announced yesterday. We had some idea of what we were going to get, but yeah, we earmark what we're going to put the money to. So, you know, that goes into our salary. So obviously there are six of us here paying for those roles. It pays for our sort of administration. It pays for marketing, communications, and I think perhaps, you know, one of the most important things is it pays for our program delivery. So it allows us to run a lot of the programs that we run with groups in Westmeath. So there's a small amount of funding in there as well that's for grant funding. So you know, we also include that in the application. So yeah, we kind of know what we get. Well, we do know what we're going to do with the money before we get it, because we earmarked it in the application.
Final question then is, spinning off from that look at the money, is when it comes to sports investment and the benefits that we get from it on a community basis in the Midlands, do you think it's good value for money?
I'd say it's excellent value for money. I'd say it's something that's probably been underappreciated, up until reasonably recently. I mean, I think I've been here for 5 years now, and the investment level has gone up every year. And I think that the proof of the pudding is in the outcomes. You know, the participation numbers are going up. You can see the difference. You know, just I can only speak for kind of Westmeath at this point, but you know, locally, the more we do, the more people seem to want us to do. So you know, we advertise our courses and our programs, and you know, they're booked out, you know, within 15-20 minutes in a lot of cases, and the demand is so high. And it's almost like the snowball effect, I think, is that the more that you do, the more awareness people in the area seem to have, the more contact that we get from other local community groups. So I think it really has a positive effect on, you know, if you're a community group and you hear that there's a community group locally that have got some, you know, a program or a project, you might want some of it as well. And that's what we tended to find. So I think it's excellent value for money, for any number of reasons, whether it's, you know, physical health, mental health, community cohesion, integration. There are so many, you know, there are so many boxes that it ticks. So, you know, I don't have any doubt that the value for money is extremely high.
Yeah, I'd be minded to agree with you, Tony. Tony Weed, coordinator of Westmeath Sports Partnership. Power to you and your team, and the very best of luck for the forthcoming next number of months and so on. We'll catch up with you down the line.
Thanks very much, Dave. Thanks for having me.
That is Health and Fitness for another week. Thanks again, everyone, for taking the time with me. Joe Cooney's next with Country Roads.